Becoming a well-rounded person in our modern society is no easy task, never mind finding your true purpose in the process. Thus, at School of Human Potential Radio, we invite world-renowned experts for a discussion on how to achieve both and lead a healthy, wealthy, and fulfilling life. Topics are all over the mind, body, and spirit spectrum, and guests range from Lisa Williams to Yakov Smirnoff and everyone in between. Listen live, call in, and allow us to help you reach your full potential. Here's your host, Alan Weisberg.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the School of Human Potential Radio. Thanks very much for joining us tonight and in our never-ending quest to find you information that will make you a well-rounded individual. We go to all parts of the globe to find experts to help you out. And today, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome Joe Elton and Amy Elton. Joe Elton is known as Dr. Bones, the disaster doctor, is a medical doctor, and Amy Elton is known as Nurse Amy, is an advanced registered nurse practitioner and a certified nurse midwife. They're medical preparedness experts and the authors of the number one bestseller in survival skills, disaster relief, and safety first aid, the Survival Medicine Handbook, a guide for when medical help is not on the way. I wanted to welcome to them to the show and find out for myself and for everybody else, how can we be better prepared if the disaster strikes? Hi, Joe. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Alan. We're here finally. Yay. Mm-hmm. You know, technology is sometimes a little crazy.
Well, disasters come in all ways. Technology is certainly one of them.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Well, we're happy to have you on. Thank you very much for coming.
You're very welcome. We're honored.
All right, guys. Well, I mean, nobody really wants to talk about the bad stuff, but bad stuff does happen. And I recall, you know, I'm in the Chicagoland area. Thankfully, we really don't have much that happens here in terms of the bad stuff. But I recall a couple of years ago, we had a few tornado scares. And we were in the movie theater, and nobody knew what to do. And we were kind of shuttled around between two different rooms, and we're waiting for the touchdown, which did not happen. So everything went fine, but it made us all think of, wow, you know, we don't live in California, we're not in the prairies, we're not used to this sort of stuff. How do we get prepared? How did you get interested in this in the first place?
Well, we are a medical doctor and an advanced registered nurse practitioner, and mm-hmm. we live down in South Florida, so we've always been, I would say, 2 week preparedness people. Most people have maybe 3 days of food and supplies in their pantry and in their medical supplies, but we've always had maybe about 2 weeks because we have hurricanes that pass through our area from time to time. And what it does, it takes out the power usually for a few days, maybe a week or more in some circumstances. So we're always ready for that. But mm-hmm. we found so many things that were occurring. We were part of a disaster medical assistance team during Hurricane Andrew in the 1990s, and we saw all the damage that occurred there. And, of course, there was 9/11. There was Hurricane Katrina. We went through swine flu epidemics. And just in the last year or so, Hurricane Sandy devastated the Northeast. We've had tornadoes in Missouri and in Arkansas, and all through, really, Tornado Alley. We've had floods in Boulder, Colorado. We've had wildfires in Texas. We have drought and earthquakes in California. So there are very few places that really are immune. Even your area, mm-hmm. living in the Chicago area, has suffered a very harsh winter.
Yeah.
And as you can, I don't have to tell him.
My daughter lives in Chicago. I've gotten a blow by blow account of all the freezing days you've had.
That's
horrible.
And even now, the Great Lakes are iced over at a much higher percentage than they are normally. So there are a lot of issues that occur that can affect the economy, that can affect ecology, that can affect the average person. And so we looked at it, and we found that there was no one that was really writing about survival medicine. And as a medical doctor and an advanced registered nurse practitioner, we thought that we would be perfect for this, since we developed such an interest in it, having been through severe storms. And we're concerned about the uncertain future, things that are happening, pandemics and other things. There's an Ebola outbreak right now, as a matter of fact, that is causing great consternation in Western Africa and, of course, now in Europe. So there's just so much that we need to be medically prepared for, and almost no one really is.
So what would be a good start for for people who, you know, I know a lot of people who are in the areas where a disaster happens, or people who are traveling to Africa, they have a little bit more in terms of being ready. But for, you know, quote unquote, the regular people who don't think about that stuff, what should they have as a good starting point just in case?
From a medical preparedness standpoint, I think that it's important to have the ability to handle injuries and illness and circumstances where modern medicine may not be readily available. We have many good people in this country. We have many good people who are paramedics and nurses and doctors. And we have the benefits of high medical technology. And your goal in normal circumstances, if you came upon an injured person on the street, is you would want to help stabilize that person. You want to transport that person to the next highest medical resource. In some of these disaster circumstances, certainly in Hurricane Katrina and some of the other ones, you were actually the highest medical resource because medical personnel were unable to reach you. And so it's very important to have the knowledge of how to deal with injuries, how to deal with illnesses, how to sterilize water, for example. In many of these circumstances, there's a big issue with regards to contaminated water supplies. And of course, you need to have the supplies that will help you. So we believe that people should have a lot of over-the-counter medicines. We believe that they should have a number of different supplies to handle injuries. And they should have, more importantly, the knowledge of what to do if they come across somebody with a bleeding wound or a broken leg, or someone who's sick with, even sick with the flu.
Very nice. And from your perspective, I know you have a website, and by the way, right now would be a good time to mention your website, in which you have a wealth of information, and that's www.doomandbloom.net. And folks can go there, and there's lots of information. There's podcasts, there's video, there are classes, you know, there are books, and now I think you're actually doing a Kickstarter for a video game. That's very cool.
Yes, as a matter of fact, at doomandbloom.net, we have over 500 posts on medical preparedness, and every single one of those posts, it's different than what you would find at any other website, or even, you know, government websites, National Institute of Health websites, in that everything that we talk about assumes that there are no doctors, there are no hospitals, and that you, because of a disaster, are now, the non-medical professional, are now the highest medical resource left for your family. And we try to teach that person how to be effective in that role in times of trouble. Our survival board game is a new one. It's actually the first board game about survival, actually written by actual survivalists. And we decided to make the scenario a post-pandemic one. We were seeing with Ebola, we've seen influenza pandemics. And so we decided to put in, instead of zombies and demons and wizards and dragons, we decided to put in survivors of a real pandemic, and their job is to collect supplies and to find a safe haven in which to call home, while at the same time avoiding people, not zombies, but people that are out to get what they have. So it's been an interesting experience for us. It's something brand new. And we think it's something that fills a need, certainly for the preparedness community. And when we play tested it with a number of board gamers, it seems to have relatively broad appeal. So we've been excited about that, and we hope this is a way to get whole families, instead of just that lone prepper or survivalist, involved in learning how to make those tough decisions that are necessary in survival circumstances.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And people can find more information about that game and the Kickstarter campaign on your website as well.
Yes, and at survivalboardgame.com.
Perfect. So what is the difference between survival medicine and modern emergency medicine?
Well, it's that it's the main reason, the main difference is that goal. Basically, you don't, you have to accept that there are circumstances in which you may have to be the person that takes care of an ill or injured individual from beginning to end if you are in a disaster. Certainly one that takes you off the grid, and certainly one, let's say on the level of Hurricane Katrina, that takes you off the grid for quite a while, and emergency personnel are just not able to reach you. And so this is the main thing. It's your goal. Instead of transporting that person to the nearest hospital, you don't have that opportunity. And so what you need to do is make do with limited supplies and with your knowledge of how to take care of injuries. And that's what we believe survival medicine represents, and that's what we teach.
Makes sense. And when we come back from the break, I wanted to start asking you some of the basic things that people can do and some of the information that you have covered in your books that people can start looking at right now and perhaps start getting some supplies on. So we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Elton and Amy Elton.
If you need help getting free from your past in order to clearly see the present so you can set your course and live your essence, I've got great news for you. Radio talk show host, author, inspirational speaker, and life purpose coach Alan Vaisberg is waiting to help you recalibrate your life. At recalibrateyourlife.com, you'll find the 5 simple steps Alan will lead you through to help you reach the place in life that has been eluding you. Restore, renew, and recalibrate today at recalibrateyourlife.com.
Are you tired of all of the negativity in children's fiction? Does your child suffer from night terrors or frequent bad dreams? Do you wish there was a series for your child to read that is fun and inspirational? The Wish Flower Field, Marie's Triumph, is a fanciful book that not only entertains, but builds inner strength. Join the many that have seen the difference this positive book has made in the way their children handle fear. The Wish Flower Field is truly a series that appeals to all ages and empowers within. Visit thewishflowerfield.com for your copy today. That's thewishflowerfield.com.
And welcome back to the School of Human Potential Radio. We're speaking with Dr. Joe Elton and Amy Elton about medical preparedness in case a disaster strikes. Wanted to ask you for some specific tips, and I know that there are many disasters, unfortunately, but what do you think would be very useful information for people to start acting upon or building some knowledge in?
Well, I think we should talk about some basic things. In a true disaster, your water supply is going to be very, very suspect. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen any of the pictures of the floods that occurred in Boulder, Colorado, you saw that water was overflowing, and when I say water, I mean dirty water, was overflowing into the reservoirs and into the water that people require to use for preparing food. And if they wind up drinking contaminated water or eating food that has been prepared with contaminated water, mm-hmm. then many times they may develop something that's very, very, you would think it's very, very simple, but it is actually extremely dangerous. And I'm talking about dysentery or diarrheal disease. And this is a problem that in the past was a very big killer, as a matter of fact. More soldiers in the Civil War died as a result of diarrheal disease and dehydration than died from issues relating to bullet wounds and shrapnel. So I think let's talk, a little bit about something very basic with regards to survival. That's how to sterilize water. So now, of course, it's always good to boil your water if you have it, if you have any water that may be suspect. There are bacteria that may survive high heat, but very few. They're very much in the minority. And so this is something that's going to get your water to a boiling boil and keep it there for just a short time and you should be able to drink it. Now, if it has particulate matter in it, has particles in it, or dirt or things like that, it's very easy to put together a filter, just either with some sand or gravel, and even bits of a t-shirt, and do that in layers through, let's say, a PVC pipe. And PVC tubing is something you could easily find at your local, I guess, hardware store or Home Depot or Lowe's. And this is something that you could make a very, very, very easily make a good filter. Now, there are also commercially made filters that are excellent. There's something called the Life Straw, which you'll find on our store. And the Life Straw is a portable filter that looks like a straw, except that it has this apparatus on it that looks like a filter. You can actually take this straw and lay down right at the edge of the lake and put your straw in the water, and you can drink directly from it. It actually filters out almost all the germs or all the particulate matter that is more than 0.2 microns.
Wow. Micron
in diameter. And it's very inexpensive, and it weighs almost nothing. So this is something that's very useful to have in your home, and is something you can consider. You can certainly find it on our website. Of course, chlorine is very useful, household bleach, that's sold for laundering clothes. It's about a 3 to 8% solution of sodium hypochlorite, and in your water treatment plant uses about a 12% solution. So if you take about 8 to 10 drops of bleach and put it in a gallon of water, you'll have an excellent chance of getting rid of the issues associated with bacteria in your water. And since we all have chlorine in our water, I think that you may notice a little taste of chlorine if you drink that water, but you will know that it's safe as a result. Now, iodine is another way that you can sterilize your water. 2% tincture of iodine, about 12 drops per gallon, will also be completely effective in eliminating most bacteria. And interestingly enough, ultraviolet light from the sun is also an excellent sterilizing agent. You get a clear bottle, and you put your water in it, and you allow it to sit in the sun for about 8 hours on a day that's sunny, and you will have an excellent chance of having the water be safe to drink afterwards. So these are some of the things that are very, very important, and everyone should know how to sterilize water for times of trouble. Do you have something to add?
No, you've done a great job.
I'm doing a great job today.
You are.
I'm rarely the person that does the majority of the speaking.
No, I'm very proud of you, darling.
All right. So that's one thing. Now, let's say you did have somebody that's dehydrated. Dehydration is a major issue, and it doesn't take very long for you to lose water of the total body content of your water enough to start feeling symptoms. With 1%, you activate of your just 1% of the loss of the total body water content in your system activates the thirst mechanism. If you don't fill up your tank right away, then you get the 2%, you start to have symptoms like mood swings, loss of efficiency, things like that. Once you hit 4%, then you start having loss of coordination. You're fatigued, you're unable, having difficulty functioning. Once you hit about 6% or so, you're just like that cartoon of the man that's crawling across the desert trying to get to the next mirage. You are in big trouble. And once you hit 10%, you can actually have organ failure and actually die as a result of dehydration. And that's exactly what those poor soldiers in the Civil War did as a result of the inability to deal with diarrheal disease. Now, the interesting thing is you can actually make your own rehydration solution. Of course, if you happen to have a lot of Gatorade available or apple juice or other clear liquids, that would be awesome. But you need not just water, you need what we call electrolytes, which are chemicals in your body that naturally occur there that keep you in water balance. And you can make your own oral rehydration solution by taking a liter of water, putting 6 to 8 teaspoons of sugar in it, 1 teaspoon of salt, a half a teaspoon of salt substitute. That stuff that you can get in the supermarket that gives you the taste of salt, but it's for people with high blood pressure, for example, who can't have salt. And it's purely potassium chloride. So it's an excellent source of potassium to help you with your electrolytes. And a pinch of baking soda, and you put that together and in a liter of water, and it is excellent to help rehydrate you. If you put it in 2 liters of water, it actually approximates the formula for something called Pedialyte, which is used in a lot of childhood diarrhea.
Yeah, that's actually true. And all of this information, because I know I'm feverishly trying to write this down, and thankfully this is a podcast so I can listen to it again, but is all of this information that you're mentioning in the book on Amazon?
Oh boy, that and 100 other topics, more than 100.
Excellent.
So we really have a lot of information there, and you can learn a lot if you'd like to educate yourself regarding medical preparedness.
And actually, I mean, speaking of dehydration, and I know a lot of the people who listen to us are very health conscious, rather. And many people are taking salt baths. And just my personal experience, what I have noticed is that taking a salt bath is dehydrating to my system. And if I don't fill up, I really feel I feel something that's going on. So have you heard of salt baths, and how does it affect you in terms of dehydration?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've heard of salt baths, and also there's a company that has salt chambers in which you sit and puts mm-hmm. you in a very, what they call, hypertonic situation. And this, the concern that I have with it, of course, is the high risk of dehydration, exactly as you mentioned. And so don't ever do any of these types of things without making sure you're starting off well hydrated and having the ability to hydrate yourself further during your experience with either the salt baths or these salt chambers.
Got it. So what would be, and again, people when talking about hydrated, you know, many people say, well, I drink 5 cups of coffee a day. Doesn't that keep me hydrated? Can you address that particular thing, please?
No, it does not. Actually, coffee is very dehydrating. And it is something that I feel is something that is best used in moderation. And I think 5 cups of coffee probably doesn't quite hit the definition of moderation to me. I mean, I do have 1 cup of coffee in the morning. What you can do if you are going to drink a lot of coffee, always have a glass of water alongside your coffee if you're drinking it at the office, because you are dehydrating yourself while you're drinking coffee, and go ahead and keep drinking water at the same time, sort of mix and match, and I think that will make a big, big difference in how you feel.
Perfect. And just to finish off on water, so in order for people to be hydrated, regardless of the situation of potential disaster, how much water should they drink per day to make sure that they are hydrated?
They should drink 8 glasses of water a day is considered to be appropriate. In a survival situation, you need 1 gallon a day per person per day.
Got it. Okay, perfect. That makes sense. I'm also looking on your website, and I see family medical survival bags. So if you want to read the book and then you want to find the right supplies, then here certainly would be a place to go. Deluxe dental kits, tourniquet kits, all sorts of things that would be useful to have in your home. Now, getting back to the Survival Medicine Handbook, you know, I know that there are first aid books. How is the Survival Medicine Handbook different from those?
The interesting thing about the Survival Medicine Handbook from other first aid books is very simple, that nowhere between its pages does it ever say go to the doctor or go to the hospital.
Right.
It's a very unusual thing for a medical book to say, but this book assumes that they no longer exist because something has happened to take modern medicine away from the average person. And so this book is really meant to instill medical self-reliance as much as possible for people in survival situations. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't want you to go to the doctor or mm-hmm. take advantage of high technology in modern times. I mean, if we, while we have the blessing of having modern medicine and being able to deal with things, I think that you should use it. As a matter of fact, you should use it to be ready. One of the basic things to be healthy and to stay healthy in a survival situation is to tune up whatever medical problems you have before a disaster occurs. You know, if you have high blood pressure, get that under control. If you have a bum knee, well, you might consider having one of those same-day surgeries that will fix it, because in a survival situation, you'll be doing a lot of things you're unaccustomed to. The exertion physically will be more, and you don't want to do that with, for example, a less than functional joint like a bum knee. I myself was blind as a bat earlier in my career, and I myself got the LASIK surgery done, the surgery that changes your eyesight, corrects your vision. And so now I have the eyes of an eagle, an extremely elderly eagle.
But not elderly.
Very old eagle, but an eagle. So I think that, and that, guess what, and that actually greatly increases my chances of survival in times of trouble.
No, that makes perfect sense. Now, one of the things that was interesting to me in talking to Amy before is I know you travel all the time and you go abroad. What do you take with you just in case things happen?
Well, we travel, oftentimes we're asked to speak in survival expos, preparedness events, but oftentimes we travel to other places. We travel to Europe. We've been just this year in Italy and Germany and in England, speaking to very small groups of people in the preparedness community. And we always bring a medical kit that allows us to be able to deal with an episode of a bleeding injury, antibiotics to take in case we run across some questionable water, things that help us sterilize water as well.
Boosters.
Things like moleskin, which is
commonly involved blisters.
Something that helps you if you either prevent or helps you if you actually have a blister. We have various antiseptics. We always take hand sanitizer. I can't impress the importance of washing your hands regularly. Every time you touch a doorknob, you are touching other people's germs. And some viruses and bacteria can live for 48 hours. Right on that doorknob. So these are some of the things that we do, not always just to take care of issues that we may personally have, but in case we come across someone.
And a couple of natural things we brought, especially on this last trip to Europe, because we usually walk around 6 to 8 hours every day. And of course, you know, you're finding yourself, you know, faced with all kinds of minor issues, and blisters were a big one this time. But we bring something called arnica salve. Mm-hmm. And arnica is absolutely wonderful for absorbing through skin and helping with those feet issues when your feet are aching after walking all day. Also, I had some knee problems because there were so many stairs. And, of course, here in America, at least in our house, in our area, are usually one-story buildings or we have elevators. But let me tell you, Rome and Milan just aren't so hip on the whole elevator thing. And not only that, but their idea of a story from first floor to second floor is about three times the amount of stairs that we have, generally speaking, yeah. Between our floors here. So yes. I developed a popping knee. I still don't know what the issue is. I'm scared to go to the doctor. But this arnica salve was absolutely amazing in helping with the pain of my knee and our legs and our feet. It's just an incredible thing. And we usually also bring raw and processed honey, which is great for the blisters. Any kind of burns you get, if you get any kind of scrapes or cuts, it'll help you from getting infected. It acts as an antimicrobial externally. So if you get these cuts or scrapes, you won't get infected. And if you happen to not use that and you do get infected, you can use it to treat it. It does act as though it is a triple antibiotic ointment. So those are a couple of natural things that I'm not going to be without ever again when I travel, that's for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, it, Arnica has been a mainstay in my household for quite a while. And it's very helpful.
It is. You know, it's funny. You know, people hear about these things. And, of course, you know, for hundreds or thousands of years, nature was our medicine cabinet. And we, you know, try to introduce some of those concepts in our book. We don't say it's an herbal book, but we do try to include at least some hints and ideas about herbal, you know, our herbal medicine to use. But it's what we had, you know, before we had commercial pharmaceuticals, this is where we got our medicine.
That's absolutely right. And we are strong believers in what we call integrated medicine, where we use the best of both worlds. We use conventional methods to deal with a lot of issues that can be treated conventionally, but we also realize that there are other remedies, natural remedies, that do have a great deal of worth also. And we can incorporate both of these in our dealing with medical issues, and also in our book, as a matter of fact. If you look at sections under particular medical illnesses, then we make every effort to tell you about the conventional way of dealing with these with limited supplies, and also what to do using perhaps medicinal plants that may just be in your own backyard. So we feel that that's very important to use both. If you don't use both, it's like going into a boxing match with one hand tied behind your back.
No, and I'm very happy that you mentioned that, and I'm very happy that it's in your book, because you know, a lot of our audience is using alternative medicine and is very comfortable in that. And sure, people always struggle combining Western and Eastern medicine, and there shouldn't be a struggle. They are of the same breed. They are both trying to help you. And one doesn't need to do one or the other. You can certainly integrate them both.
Absolutely. That is our focus. And also, if you think about it from a survival standpoint, pharmaceuticals probably will run out at one point or another if they're not making them anymore because some major disaster has occurred. We talk about long-term survival as much as we talk about just a few days without power. And it's very important to have your own medicinal garden. As a matter of fact, there's an entire chapter on how to put together your own medicinal garden in the Survival Medicine Handbook.
And also, there's a chapter on essential oils. And the one thing about essential oils that I will tell people who would like to become prepared is, if you're going to stock up on medical supplies, do not forget your essential oils. It takes so much plant matter to produce even tiny, minute amounts of oil. And those oils, if you store them properly, can last indefinitely. You've got to get those now. If you're in a survival situation, short-term or long-term, and you find you are going to have to start growing food, the last thing you want to do is plant an acre of lavender and a whole bunch of lemongrass and licorice and, you know, all of these things that, you know, have wonderful benefits, but you're not going to have the space or the effort or the time to do it. So get your essential oils now. They're wonderful for everyday use for so many different issues, and it doesn't take any effort to buy them. If you don't have them, believe me, you're not going to want to have to start creating some lavender or tea tree oil in a disaster situation.
As a matter of fact, I just wanted to say that our largest medical kit, what we call our family medical bag, actually has an entire set, not only of splints and blood clotting powders and things like that, but it also has an entire selection of essential oils, salves,
tinctures,
organic teas.
I have raw honey in it, cayenne pepper.
Right.
I mean, this is right in your medical kit.
Right.
Now, this is us, a doctor and a nurse practitioner, saying these are your medical supplies. These essential oils, these salves, these things are just as important to you as all of these other things.
Well, that's wonderful. And I was about to ask if you have them in that bag. I'm looking at it right now on your website. I'm very happy that you do. I think you just gained a lot of new customers because you are integrating and you're not just sticking to the Western roots only. Speaking of the shows, there are so many shows on television right now. There's Revolution. I haven't watched The 100, but it seems interesting in that direction. There was Lost. There are many applications, unfortunately, for what you are doing on those shows. Have you talked to anybody from the producers, see if you can incorporate some of your products in there?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we were asked to be technical advisors for World War Z, have been asked to appear on
Doomsday Preppers. Like a million times. And we keep saying no. Yes. I'm like, you just make everybody seem crazy.
Well, that's the thing. What we're looking to do, this is a serious thing. So we're really, other than going on television to, talk about this and being on radio and podcasts and things like that to spread the word of medical preparedness. I mean, we're really mostly...
Our focus is education.
Not really.
I mean, it's great if we do a podcast and we laugh and have a good time while we're educating, but that's our whole thing. And you can't go on one of these shows and spend your entire, 15 minutes educating. They want you to do, crazy thing. You blow up a car or pretend like 100 people were just shot.
Shoot a lot of
now go take care of them. They want some drama. And that drama is great for their ratings and their advertising, but that's not so great for us in trying to put out the message of, this is important, and it's not a crazy thing. It's just should be normal. This is people lived 100 years ago with the idea that they had to be prepared for seasons. They had to can things, dehydrate things, store things properly. They knew they wouldn't have certain sources of food at certain times of the year. They knew when the apples were ripe, when the berries came, to fruition. They knew when these things happened, and they prepared for the other times during the year when they didn't have them. But we're so used to going to grocery stores and having things at our fingertips that people stop thinking about even just seasonal preparedness. It's pretty sad that this is not something we do on a normal basis. It really should be normal.
And this is what we're trying to educate people about. And it's not sexy, and it's not it's not like what you see on Revolution or even Walking Dead places like that. And zombies,
especially not Walking Dead. And zombie, although I love the show,
zombies are very dramatic, but they're not educated. They don't really teach you much. But we do teach you, and we do it in such a fashion, I hope, that it doesn't really seem like you're just reading a textbook or just going to class.
Yeah, and that makes sense. There's plenty of drama, unfortunately, when when people are in the in life in general. There's so much drama all around people, all around work and families and everything else that goes on in life. There's enough drama. It would be better just to be prepared and not have to worry about it. I know many people got prepared for 2012 and the end of the world. So all of the stores were empty. So at least people have started looking into survival and what happens.
I have one thing to say about the Mayan apocalypse.
Yeah, that was funny.
That the Mayans did not have a concept of the leap year. So the Mayan apocalypse actually occurred a year and a half before the date that it was supposed to occur on 2012.
And I'm sure people knew about that, but that would not go well with the marketing approach. So
yes, that's right.
All of the movies coming out. By the way, I still have not seen 2012 and have no intention of doing that.
Good. Don't give them your advertising money.
They don't need it. Anybody that tries to scare people for a living, that's not something that I'm interested in. So expiration dates, that's one of the other questions that I wanted to ask you. A lot of the medicines, and we may look in our cabinets and all of a sudden realize in the situation that, oops, it's past its prime. Should we pay attention to those? And if certain things are more important than others in terms of expiration dates?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about expiration dates. Expiration dates were mandated by the U.S. government in 1979. And mm-hmm. since then, we've had expiration dates on our medications. Now, what the expiration date actually means is it is the last day that the pharmaceutical company will guarantee the potency of the medication that you're taking. Now, that doesn't mean that if you take it a little bit later than that, then that you're going to grow a horn in the middle of your forehead or a third eye.
Which in a survival situation, that could be very useful.
Honey, that if you could find a medication to do that, I might be willing to do that in a survival situation. Certainly to free up my hands if somebody is coming at me.
Well, I found a medicine that allowed me to grow antlers, but that's about it. Well, but what I'd like to say about expiration dates is that the U.S. government had billions, or let's say billions of dollars worth, but millions of doses of medication that they've had in warehouses to deal with possible mass disasters and things like that. In that circumstance, many of these became expired. And so they were taking these forklifts and throwing away these millions of doses of expired medications, but they just said, took a look at it and said, this is a lot of money. And mm-hmm. so they decided to put together an experiment. And they called it the Shelf Life Extension Plan or Program. And they took 100 different medicines that they commonly keep for a disaster, and they tested them when they were expired. And they found that almost all the medicines that were in pill or capsule form were completely potent, 100% potent, 2 to 12 years after their expiration date. Mm. And so, as a result, I tell people not to throw away their expired medications as long as they're in pill or capsule form. Liquids were different. They found that liquids did lose a lot of potency, things like insulin, things like let's say amoxicillin elixir that's given to children, those did lose potency very quickly. They didn't become dangerous, but they were not useful anymore in terms of medical effects. So this is something that I think that's very important to know, that you should not, especially if you're keeping them for medical storage in case of disaster. I do not believe that the grand majority of these medications should be thrown away. They should be stored.
Excellent. Well, thank you for letting me know. I know that going back to the jokes, the Wolf of Wall Street certainly told us something about the potency and the expiration dates. And on that note, and we have obviously more questions for you, but let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation and talk about some of the must-have medical supplies and some of the upcoming projects that you're working on. Please stay with us. Hi, I'm Alan Weisberg with Recalibrate Your Life, and I help people like you find their soul purpose, align with it, and gain the balance that you seek. But don't take my word for it. Take my clients.
Alan, what can I say? But wow, I've always had so many questions on whether I'm on the right path, am I fulfilling my life's mission? These are questions that I assume have been pondered by everyone since the beginning of time. However, the gift that you possess has helped me immensely. It confirmed my need to be artistic, my need to help others so much. I can't even explain the experience. It confirms so much more than I can describe in this small note of appreciation. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak, allowing me to release my inner thoughts, and most importantly, for confirming and leading me to what I always believed but was not confident enough to believe in. Thank you. Trust me, this was hard for me to do, but I do know that God has blessed us with various gifts, and you have an amazing gift. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You, like all of my clients, deserve to live in alignment with your soul purpose. To begin your journey, visit recalibrateyourlife.com or call 800-323-1619. And don't hesitate. Recalibrate. Becoming a well-rounded person in our modern society is no easy task. Never mind finding your true purpose in the process. Thus, at School of Human Potential Radio, we invite world-renowned experts for a discussion on how to achieve both and lead a healthy, wealthy, and fulfilling life. Topics are all over the mind, body, and spirit spectrum, and guests range from Lisa Williams to Yakov Smirnoff and everyone in between. Listen live, call in, and allow us to help you reach your full potential. Welcome back to School of Human Potential Radio. We're talking about survival, and we're talking about medical preparedness, and a very, very interesting conversation. So, Amy, wanted to ask you a question. I know you were talking about some of your favorite products, and you've mentioned Arnica, and you've mentioned essential oils. What are some of the other natural products that have medical benefits that you would suggest for people to know about?
Well, I mean, just to mention a couple of essential oils, which, you know, I truly feel that people shouldn't be without. And we did mention tea tree oil. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely fantastic. It's an antiseptic. It's antimicrobial. It kills bacteria and treats wound infections. It's great for bug bites, fungal treatment for. Yeah, I had a little bit of water. Sorry about that. It's great for athlete's foot, nail fungus. It actually, if you can put it in with Dr. Bronner's Castile soap, it can act as a lice and scabies killer. It's amazing. Mm. And if you use it as inhalation therapy, it can loosen lung congestion, nasal congestion. It can stimulate the immune system to help you fight infections. So that's one of my favorite oils. The other one we mentioned that you can't grow that acre of lavender, and that's another amazing essential oil. And it has some similar properties. It is, for burn treatments. It's also antimicrobial and can be used as a steam inhalation for decongesting. But it's also an analgesic. So it will really help you for bug bites, and if you get minor burns, will actually help take that sting away and that pain. So that's a wonderful. Another one is peppermint oil, eucalyptus, rosemary, geranium. Those are some really good ones to at least get started. You don't want to overwhelm somebody and say, oh, this is your top 100 essential oils, because each one of those, because it's out of a whole plant and not just a constituent of a plant, like how they make pharmaceutical medications, it has a lot of different properties. So you have to get to know your essential oils. So I suggest people get a handful of them, 4 to 6, really, really get to know them, and then expand upon those. You can grow a medicinal garden and some wonderful things. In fact, most people in this country can grow garlic, generally, except for me in the deep, deep South Florida. I have some issues still trying to find a really good garlic that grows and gives you some nice bulbs. But so far, I haven't been truly lucky, but everyone else can do it. Grow garlic. Oh, my goodness. You will stimulate your immune system, and that is a powerful antibiotic. In fact, if you're getting sick, take a teaspoon or a tablespoon, if you can handle it, of raw, unprocessed honey, crush up a fresh clove of garlic. No, it's not going to taste great, but boy, are you going to start fighting those diseases. I mean, you are going to battle that virus and battle that bacteria and put yourself on the road to feeling better. So there's a lot of things that nature brings us that can help you today and also in a disaster.
Very true. And eucalyptus and garlic, these are all the things that we use in our home. I remember my parents giving me garlic, and that's where I've gotten it from. But every time I feel that I'm finding something, and we have two kids who always pick something up. 2 weeks ago, my whole family was sick with varying things. And I just went to my regiment. I have garlic. I don't do that with honey. What I do is I take fresh garlic, and as I'm making my salad and as I'm making the different things that go with it, such as dressings. Yeah, exactly. Dressings. I just throw the garlic into the mixer, and that's it. So absolutely. Garlic has been a savior for me. And no, I did not get sick when everybody around me did. So knock on wood.
I'm knocking on wood for you. That's wonderful.
And in terms of things, you've mentioned that you can grow garlic, but apparently you grow tilapia. I read that on your site. So you grow tilapia there in Florida?
Yes, as a matter of fact, tilapia can live in areas that do not go under about 45 degrees for any significant length of time. And they're excellent. We grow them in ponds. And they're really quite easy to fish to take care of. And they're delicious.
Well, it's true, right? Yeah.
And they're prolific. They breed like rabbits. If you want to have a whole lot of fish, get tilapia.
Right. They're interesting fish in that they take care of their eggs by holding them in their mouths.
Their babies.
Yeah, and the babies. So they're interesting fish to watch. We have a couple of breeding pairs that we have in large
tanks,
aquariums.
Yeah.
But most of them are of course, in ponds.
Nice. Well, that's fascinating stuff. And something, again, for people, God forbid, if there's a long term, if there's something happening, perhaps this will be a food source for them, so they should know about it. As we're wrapping up, I'm thinking about all the things that you've mentioned. I'm trying to find out how large your survival medicine handbook is, because based on all of these advices, it's probably at least a few thousand pages.
You would think so, but it's actually in plain English, and so we've kept out a lot of the medicalese, and it really is about 550 pages, perhaps. And we have, of course, a list of things in terms of medical supplies that we think you should have in certain situations. We have an entire glossary of medical terminology, so you could read about that, although we really use very, very little of it in the book, only what's absolutely necessary for you to learn in your new role as medical provider for times of trouble. And we really feel that this is the kind of book that could save some lives if people find themselves left to their own devices in a disaster situation.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been enlightening, and I'm looking forward to getting the book. I'm looking forward to getting that family medical survival bag, so I can have that at my house. Speaking of which, that particular bag, I have a family of four. Is that enough, and I guess for what period of time?
Absolutely. It is excellent, and it was most of the materials in it would last really for many years. Things like common antiseptics, we have antiseptic wipes for animal bites, for iodine wipes and alcohol wipes and BZK wipes, other kinds
and
of things.
And the essential oils.
And essential oils. But what I'm trying to say is that the wipes, over the course of time, may dry out.
Yes.
So this is something I would replace every couple of years if you could.
Makes sense. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate the information. I know our audience does as well. Let's mention your website once again and where people can find you. Your book is available everywhere. So your website is doomandbloom.net. Thank you very much, Dr. Joe Elton and Amy Elton, for coming by. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Honored to be here.
It's my pleasure. For everybody, thanks so much for yet another edition of School of Human Potential, where we bring you many different things in the areas of mind, body, and spirit in order to help you become a well-rounded individual so you can leave your worries behind and you can live a healthy, wealthy, and fulfilling life. Thanks so much for joining me tonight, and we will speak to you again next week.
Thank you once again for listening to School of Human Potential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the program and are inspired to make a positive change in your life. For more information about the school, please like our Facebook page and visit www.schoolhp.com. To sign up for a session with Alan, please visit www.recalibrateyourlife.com or call 1-800-323-1619.